Welcome back to Traveling with Françoise, everyone. I am Françoise Rose, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. For those of you that are just joining us, we do start at 11.05 a.m. The first hour is a local event show where we talk about all sorts of things going on here in the Coachella Valley. We had Aaron Scott from the Living Desert come on, and we gave some Living Desert Wild Lights tickets away to Jocelyn, so congratulations to her. She was our winner. So this hour of the show, we shift into travel mode. Yes, we are brought to you in part by Abracadabra Garage Door Service, locally owned and operated. Visit their website, abracadabradoor.com, if you have any problems. And yes, those are the people that I use. I use them, and they keep my garage door. I don't want to be stuck. I don't want to, you know, get paranoid, and all of a sudden I get out there and I can't get out of my garage, you know, even though they have a lever. All right, let's just move right along. Joining us in the boardroom, as always, is Sean. Hey, Sean.
Good morning. How are you? Or afternoon, I guess.
Now. It's afternoon. We have just been sidetracked. How many times now have we?
Well, I was going to tell you, I need my garage door fixed.
Oh, well, call Abracadabra. And those guys,
I do,
Albert.
I need to call them.
We're going to have Albert on the show, too, talk about how his family owned and operated the business. But we talked about garlic in the first hour and all sorts of craziness. I don't know. We're very sidetracked quite often, but we did get a lot of events covered. All right. This is very, very important, this part of the show. Very. Because we have kind of been giving you a little, you know, updates every now and then about longtime listener Doug Edwards. And Doug, we're giving you a big shout out, big warm hug and all that sort of stuff. And Gina, I talk to Gina frequently, but we're so glad that you are up and about and feeling better and listening to Traveling with Françoise again, because frankly, I can feel it when you're not. I can feel those vibes. So you're a big part of this show. So good to have you back listening to us again. So big hugs to you. All right. See, I read all the emails from everyone. I just, you're all my big family out there. So when things aren't right, I want them to be right. Okay, today on the show, Irene Rodriguez from the Cabot's Pueblo Museum will be joining us, and we will find out if Sean would get stuck inside the Cabot or not. That was a whole conversation the first hour. You won't, I promise. He's right. Going. He's going. And you'll find out why it's so fascinating. And I have the Irene coming on this hour of the show because it really is almost a travel destination in itself without leaving the Coachella Valley. It really is. It's fascinating up there. Also a great place to send your visitors when they're coming in for the holidays. You're looking for something unique for them to do where they learn a little bit of history about the Coachella Valley. Just again, it really is something. So if you've never been, we have some tickets. I think I have tickets right now on the website. We have a contest for Cabot Pueblo Museum tickets on the website. I know I've sent a lot of you over there, but you really, really need to go. Okay, yesterday I was on KESQ. I talked about Wickenburg. And I think I'm going to have someone from Wickenburg call the show. I really liked that cowboy town. It's about 4.5 hours from the Coachella Valley, 90 minutes from Phoenix. It is in Arizona. It is a historic town founded in 1863. They have one of the best ghost towns in the United States there. Vulture
oh, yeah?
City. Yeah.
That sounds cool.
It doesn't it? And then, like I say, the town itself, they have these big cowboy statues. They have the biggest spurs statues ever there, cowboys everywhere, this quaint, charming, it's almost like a Hallmark town that you see in the Hallmark movie. Really, it is. But yet they have this place called Wickenburg Ranch. It is a golf course community, which is spectacular. It is gorgeous. I don't know. I might live out there someday. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know. I just kind of really liked it. So.
Well, then you have to live there at least for a little while.
Oh, maybe someday. I don't know. I'm a California girl. It's going to be hard to pull me away.
I can see that. But see, I'm not from here, so I'm going to.
You don't care. Yeah. All right.
But I don't want to leave here, though, either. So.
Well, good.
I understand it's infectious. It's infectious ways, I guess.
Because you're irreplaceable, Sean. So I don't want you to leave. So
I'm not going anywhere soon.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm being very selfish. Once in a while, he'll bring up, oh, I'm thinking about going to Oregon. And I just cringe. I try to act really low key. Oh, great. Go. But inside, I'm saying, don't go. Don't go. All right. Christmas is here. I have a list on where you can go see some Christmas trees, the real thing that are supposed to be spectacular, because they have lists for everything nowadays. And I love Christmas decorations, and I have my house decorated and lights. Just I like twinkling lights, colored white, whatever. I like them all. So it's right now is a good time for me. In fact, a gal came over that lives sort of across the fairway from us, and she said, "At night, I keep seeing." keep seeing these lights, and I can't figure out if it's a tree in your house or what the deal is. Well, I have these big, they're lights that look like the Christmas lights that you put on your house.
Uh-huh.
They're shaped, those colored
right.
bulbs that like we put,
bulb.
The big ones.
Right.
Yeah. And I have them along this little garden area, this little fence area. And she said, that's what I kept seeing every night was these lights. Because they are big. I mean, these things are gigantic. But I like looking at them. Anyway, all right. So where can you see some great Christmas trees? They say Christmas at the Capitol Pierre of South Dakota. It is a forest of nearly 100 Christmas trees transforms the South Dakota State Capitol every holiday season. Do they decorate all those trees? Wow. Okay.
That would be something to see.
That would be something. And these are supposed to be 10 Christmas trees worth a trip to go see. All right. The Toledo Zoo, they have more than 1 million lights, including 35,000 alone on the 85-foot spruce. Last year, the show attracted 175,000 visitors. Okay. So if you're going to Ohio, go to the Toledo Zoo. The White House Christmas tree, oh, I would love to see that tree.
I don't think I've seen it.
Now, they do have a special. Usually every year they have a special on one of the business channels to where they
right.
take you inside the White House and show you all the decorations,
right.
which obviously Melania is not putting up herself or any
I'm
of the
sure
past.
There's some help, yeah.
Yeah, any of the past first ladies, they yeah. have someone. They just direct it all.
There you go.
And then they do this amazing gingerbread house and all this sort of stuff. So I would really, I'll put that on my list of things to do to go to the White House. Also, Fenwolf Hall Marketplace in Boston. I'm sure I said that wrong. They have a 60-foot Norwegian spruce tree that they truck in from Red Hook, New York. And that is all decked out and beautiful. Another place is Citadel Outlets in Commerce, California. Commerce. That's over by the airport, isn't it? LA Airport? Commerce?
It sounds familiar. I can't think of exactly what
yeah.
town, but it sounds about right.
But the City of Commerce, they have a... They bring a white fir from California's Shasta Trinity National Forest. It stands 110 feet tall and is easily visible from the freeway. And that is it. Citadel Outlets in Commerce, California. If you've been out there and you've seen this tree, give us a call. 760-440-8255. That's 760-440-8255. If you've been to the Citadel Outlets in Commerce, California, and have seen this 110-foot tree. Also, in Pennsylvania, Percasey Borrows. I know I've... Percasey? Percasey? Borrow? Okay. Nugget Casino in Sparks, Nevada. They have a gigantic tree there that's 70 feet tall, and that is... in the town's Victorian Square. Texas Pecan Tree, Highland Park, Texas, they have a gigantic tree there. It's 75 feet tall with has built a tradition around decorating a mammoth pecan tree which stands. Ah, and the tree's 150 years old, so they don't decorate a fir tree. They do a pecan tree. That's in Texas. Rockefeller Center, of course, New York. I was there last year. I just loved it. It's just so spectacular. And the mayor's Christmas tree in Kansas City, Missouri. Those are some places they say they recommend that you go to check out their Christmas tree. So there you go. All right. Let's see what else. How about we step aside for a moment. When we come back, we'll talk about some travel news, what's going on, and we'll give away those Palm Springs movie vouchers as well. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise right here on Money Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Traveling with Francoise. I am Francoise Rhodes, your host, and thanks so much for joining us today. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Cabot's Pueblo Museum. They are open, they're open Tuesday through Sunday, closed on Monday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can go to their website, cabotsmuseum.org. I don't want to say too much about it because we're going to wait till Irene comes in here and we're going to talk about all the things Cabot. $13 general admission, $11 seniors, active military, children ages 6 through 12. So there you, but I want to hear from the expert. She's more of an expert than I am about it, but I've been up there several times and I'm always fascinated. I always see new things every time I go up there. All right, I'm going to jump right into travel, but we do have one thing I do want to mention that I didn't mention earlier. This week I did go to the ACT this past week, their December Travel Club meeting, packed house. They were dancing and doing all sorts of craziness, ACT tours. They had people talked about their recent trip to Africa with them, their recent trip to Israel. And also they gave away a cruise, a European river cruise for two. And yeah, I didn't win it. No, I didn't. But then I couldn't sign up. I thought about it, but I couldn't. So anyway, their next Travel Club meeting will be in January. And Luis Fuertes will be there in person in February. Huell Hauser's cameraman. So a lot of stuff going on with adult customized tours. All right, we do have two vouchers. They're for any movie at the Palm Springs International Film Festival, which is coming up in January. I will mail you these vouchers. You just go up to the window and exchange them for the ticket for the movie that you want to see. And I don't know, I don't think they do the big blocks like they do the short film festival. We're going to have to get into it a little bit more. But these are good for a couple movies at the film festival. If you would like to win these, 760-440-8255. That's 760-440-8255, and I will mail these out to you. And like I say, you pick whatever movies you want to go to, and these vouchers will get you in there. So again, 760-440-8255. All right, so we talk about travel, domestic travel. U.S. Travel Association's latest Travel Trends Index recently reported positive news of the travel industry's 104th consecutive month of overall growth. However, economists are concerned by the decelerated rate of inbound international traffic. Also, overall, in August, travel to and within the U.S. grew 3.8% when compared with the same period last year. This is mostly due to the strength of the domestic leisure and business travel, while international inbound travel improved at a pace of 1.2% year over year. The rate of growth has a slower pace than that of the domestic market and continues to underperform compared to the global competitors. So definitely, it's kind of confusing what they're saying. We're growing. Some areas aren't growing, but travel is still stronger than ever. It really is. And one of those areas that is stronger than ever is the global wellness industry is now a $4.2 trillion market. Yes, the industry keeps growing and growing. It was $3.7 trillion in 2015. Now, and in 2017, it was $4.2 trillion. The top wellness markets for growth were the spa industry, and that is 9.8%, followed by the wellness tourism, 6.5%. Whew, okay. Delta will convert waste into jet fuel. Yes, Delta and Oregon-based Agilex will convert waste plastics into jet fuel at the airline's refinery in Philadelphia. Delta, through its refinery subsidiary, Monroe Energy, will refine up to 2,500 barrels of oil per day by 2020 using synthetic feedstock converted from plastic. Wow, very, very interesting that they are doing that. That things are changing. All right, and in airports now, they're doing something to calm the nerves of jittery flyers. Yes, that is, they have animal organizations. Yes, they have a canine airport therapy squad called CATS, that they go into the airports and they just wander around and they let people pet the animals and talk to them and hug them. They have 114 enrolled dogs so far, as well as one cat. They say this program is proving to be a very positive experience for people and children who are nervous about flying. So if you're in the airport, and these are not service dogs, these are regular pets that love people. So they go in there and they just wander around and they let you hug and talk to them and pet them and all sorts of stuff. So if you see that, now you know what we're talking about. Sean, yes.
You have a winner.
And?
You have Jean from Palm Desert.
Okay. Hi, Jean.
Hello, Francoise. What a nice surprise for me today. I think that's lovely.
Well, fantastic. So you normally go to the Palm Springs International Film Festival?
Yes, I have been in the past, and I go a lot also to the Seattle International Film Festival, which is in May.
Ah, have you ever been out to the Brago Springs Film Festival?
No, I haven't yet. I must check that out if it's still to still to happen.
Oh, yes, they're growing. Each year it's getting larger and larger. In fact, they're not sure how they're going to handle it in the upcoming years because it's getting it's getting such positive reviews and people that have never been to Borrego Springs. Anyway, that's put that on your list, Jean. How does that sound?
I certainly will. And thank you so much.
You're really more than welcome. Congratulations. And if I don't chat to you before then, have a Merry Christmas.
And I wish the same for you.
Thank
and
you.
Your family. Goodbye.
All right.
Now. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was nice. Congratulations to Jean. She won those two movie vouchers for the Palm Springs International Film Festival. All right. We're talking about, I pulled this out because I thought it was interesting since I am a writer and I love to read. So, and this is what, one potential reason why cruise ship libraries have been shrinking. Book attrition. Now, listen to this. Holland American Line president Orlando Ashford told a group at a convention that 40 to 50% of the books on Holland American ships disappear each year. It would cost about $2 million to replace them.
So people are taking them?
They're taking them. They read them and they probably don't finish them.
Right.
So instead of leaving them in the library, they just take them.
I mean, if that makes sense in your head, I guess.
Well, for a reader, it is, because they're starting a book and they don't want to not finish
right,
it. So they figured, well, no one's going to miss it. The phone's ringing, so we're getting a phone call. So, so they take the book, and then the cruise ships have to replace these books, which costs a lot of money. So this is very interesting. I've never heard that. Usually what happens in libraries like cruise ships and you know, in communities, and so we take books, and then we take them back when we're done reading them. And I think because the people leave the cruise ship, they don't take them back. But I would think that people there on the cruises, after they read a book, might just leave them so they can put them in the library. I don't know.
It would make sense.
Yeah, you would think. But isn't that something?
I think it's funny that people just walk off with things and they don't think.
Right.
This isn't mine.
This is mine. Yeah, I don't know. But that's the reason why they're getting smaller and smaller, these libraries, because they just don't want to keep replenishing all the books in them.
Right. Well, it would get tough when people are just walking away with them.
I don't do that. I actually go to the library where I live and I just take I go in with a bag. And when I start it, now I take a bag in and a bag out. A bag in and a bag out.
Yeah, that's a good way. But see, that's.
Yes.
I'm sure the people taking the books off the cruise ships aren't leaving any books there.
That's it.
It's not a trade, I don't think.
Yeah. Or they are all wet and gooey and you can't use them anyway. So there you go. All right. So next time, if you're going on a cruise, I advise that you take books because there might not be a library on board anymore because they're just shrinking. And in the world of travel media, many publications have begun to ban overused and basically meaningless terms like bespoke. I have never used the word bespoke when I'm talking about travel. Experiential. Haven't used that one either. Transformative. Iconic. Yes, I have used that one. That one I have used, but they are trying to get away from all those words. They're telling all the writers out there, go to your thesaurus and find some new ones because we're getting tired of being described as the same thing over and over. Yeah, which I thought that was very interesting. So.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's a positive description, then.
Yeah, some things you just can't. After a while, there's only so many adjectives to describe stunning, gorgeous, attractive, beautiful, amazing,
right.
Incredible. I mean, you don't that people would even understand.
Right. I was going to say, and then the other side of it, you can't just use some crazy, awesome word that nobody knows.
I mean, as hard as people have been trying to incorporate the word plethora, which means a lot,
right.
A big variety.
Right.
It's not even easy to say.
No.
It doesn't sound nice, and people continue to try to use that word, and it just doesn't seem to
fit. I think that if you don't say it while you talk to people, don't write it.
Yeah.
I think that writing, I'm not a fan of formal writing. I'm more of a fan of just, I guess it'd be informal writing.
Yeah, casual.
So if you don't say plethora in your regular.
No. I have tried.
Speaking, I don't say that.
And I feel even uncomfortable when I say it. There's words that I right away just don't feel comfortable saying, and it tells because you can tell because I kind of hesitate. And,
right. And then you don't say it quite right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if I hesitate on the word, I'm not going to say it right.
Right. Then I apologize and it's worth it. So I will make sure, though, that I do not use any. I won't use iconic anymore. I'll come up with something else. But that's what they're saying. All right. The World Economic Fund to compile a list of the safest countries by their risk of violent crime. Well, this is what they discovered was that parts of the Middle East and North America are far safer than countries like the U.S. or even popular holiday destinations like France. Iceland came in first for the safest country in the world, which is not surprising. They've only had 36 people murdered since 2000. It's a pretty good rate there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Perhaps more surprising is that the United Arab Emirates tied with Iceland as the safest country in terms of their crime risk index. Is that interesting?
It's very interesting.
Yeah, and the United Arab Emirates was followed by Singapore, then Spain. The U.S. ranked 15th on the list, beaten out by countries like Jordan and Morocco, which are generally portrayed as being places of contention. The U.S. was followed immediately by Mexico, then India, Thailand, Turkey, and South Africa. Travel also looked at safety in terms of health and natural disasters. Barbados was the safest in terms of natural disasters, followed by Iceland and the United Arab Emirates. Japan was the riskiest country to visit in terms of natural disasters due to their part in their high chance of earthquakes. So there you go. Western countries had a low risk for health concerns, as did the United Arab Emirates, Japan, and the U.S. So we're kind of right in the middle there, except for the low risk of health concerns. Japan, you might be in an earthquake. Looks like we're all moving to Iceland.
Sounds like a plan. So, I think that people have to understand that there's nice areas and there's bad areas of everywhere.
Yeah. Well,
period.
And we are earthquake right here. We're sitting on a big earthquake fault here in Coachella Valley, but doesn't bother us any. On that note, we're going to step aside. When we come back, Irene Rodriguez joins us from the Cabot's Pueblo Museum. Stick around. It'll be fascinating. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise. I am Francoise Rhodes, your host. And remember, you can catch us on AM, FM, streaming live, and podcast. Joining us in studio, as promised, is Irene Rodriguez from the Cabot's Pueblo Museum. Hi, Irene.
Hi, Francoise.
It's been a while.
Yes, it has. It has. I'm happy to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back because so much is happening, and we're getting people going to the Cabot's that have never been. And I love that when they call to win tickets and they say, nope. Never been. So tell us a little bit before we get into about things that are happening, the events and what people are going to see at the Cabot's Pueblo Museum. Tell us about the museum. Give us a little history.
I'll give you a little history. This little kind of little thing that I prepared for a program one time is sort of like people know the nursery rhyme, the house that Jack built. We have one here, the house that Cabot built. Mm-hmm. So when you go in there, that's nest in the neighborhood, you see things that he made from recyclable materials. When we say recyclable materials, we mean telephone poles, railroad cross ties, doors that he transformed from the old wagon boards, and even using glass, pieces of glass to design his unique windows. And of course, part of it too is also with adobe bricks. As well. So as you walk in, you see this unique building nestled in the neighborhood, because it's really in the neighborhood, and you're sort of in awe what he did. And what I like about Cabot is that he started this when he was at the age of 58.
And now, Irene, was that his first home here in the desert, or was it was this a luxury housing compared to his first one? Because I think if the story goes right, he was married and she wasn't going to live in the other one, something like that.
A little bit of that. So the Pueblo represents the second time that he came to the area and the second time that he then also decided to stay here as well. The first time he came was in 1913 as a homesteader. So it is his second home. The first home that he actually built, again, was, you know, protection from the elements, sort of into little hillside there. And that property was close to Two Bunch Palms Resort. On that. Mm-hmm. And that's where he rediscovered the mineral waters. So he's credited to rediscovering the mineral waters, both the hot and the cold springs. Before that, he will have to travel to Granite Station 7 miles each way every 3 days to get water for him and his family.
And didn't his mule, Mary, go with him? Or did
yes.
I just know little bits of the story, but I'm fascinated by this story.
Yes. Merry Christmas. So the mule to travel. So he named it Merry Christmas because he bought it around Merry Christmas. And it's interesting because he purchased Merry Christmas, a donkey, for $10. at that time, you know, around 1913, 1914, yeah. And the homestead, which was 160 acres under the whole, was $10 as well. So the brew was like really expensive. So,
wow.
So yeah. To go on with what you're saying is after he completed the requirements of the Homestead Act, they did go back to Seattle where his first wife was from and lived. And so he really wanted to come back to the desert. And I just imagine, you know, 1913, 14 being in the area, less, you know, than 20 people there, you know, and then being from Seattle activities. So she wasn't going to have it. So that's when they did separated and divorced. So, and then the second time here, and he came back in the late 1930s. That is due to L.W. Coffey. So he met L.W. Coffey in Moore Park in the 30s, where Cabot had a store. And he shared with Coffey that there were mineral waters in this area of Desert Hot Springs. And so Coffey came, and he really had the vision to make this a spa city because he knew the benefits and the health benefits, especially of mineral waters. And he really wanted to make sure these mineral waters were accessible to everybody. And so once the Coffey was going to develop in his mind this area, that's when Cabot decided to come and stay here for good. And during that time, he met his second wife, Portia.
Oh.
On it. So, yeah. So, him and Portia. So, in one of the places that we show, he really transformed it for Portia's apartment privacy. Because he always had the mind of opening the Pueblo as a museum and his living quarters. And yet, that is his second building. He built another one. That it's really interesting because everything that he's done, he's really methodical and thoughtful, and nothing was left to chance. And I really realized that a few months ago when I went and saw the second home. The second home, what's remaining is just a foundation of it.
Is it close? I don't mean to interrupt, but is it close to this?
It is really close, mm-hmm. but you can't see it from the road. Uh-huh. If you go to the Pueblo, there's the wow house that you kind of climb up to the hill. You get a wonderful view of the whole landscape. And viewing from that top area, you can't even see the third structure that he built to retire on it. So, but it's really neat. Once when you go hike into it, it's not too far, and then you see the view that he was able to see from there, plus to be protected from the road, but to protect from the elements, and also think about what we also have of the aquifer of the hot springs is because we're between two tectonic plates, the Pacific and the North America on it. So he also knowing a little bit about the area where how he built this, being that we also knew some faults on it.
Well, it's the views are spectacular from it. I mean, he picked some beautiful a view lot up there, and I'm just amazed that it didn't through the years get torn down.
It almost did. Did you know that part of the story?
No, I didn't know that because I am surprised. I always think that when I go up there.
So when he died in 1965, his widow left. Now, we don't know if she went of her own accord or if his sisters really didn't want her to stay in the area by herself on that. So imagine this building by itself.
Right.
People actually were living there, were having parties, helped themselves to things. So at that point, you know, the city was really thinking of demolishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we owe this coal erod and rescuing the Pueblo from being demolished on it. So that was like the 1970s. He really stood up to the bulldozer and was able to buy the property from the estate of Portia. And it opened up more of the rooms for the public to see what Cabot did.
And who was that did that?
Cole Erod. We consider him as the second owner. On the third level of the property, you'll see Wayoki, which is an Indian carving. Mm-hmm. And Cole Ira was the one who brought the artist, Peter Toth, to really carve that on site.
Okay, because I have the brochure. I keep this brochure so I can talk intelligently about Cabot. So why do we use the word Pueblo?
Very good question on that. So something that Cabot was really really wanted to share with the community and with everybody is that he was an advocate for Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And he really wanted to showcase and really show people the rich culture and their contributions. And so that's why he sort of designed and built this home as a Pueblo, Hopi Pueblo style. It's not a true Hopi home, but it is based on their style. And so even around the Pueblo and different parts of the buildings around the property, there's panels that has Kashina dolls as well, mm-hmm. that he painted it. I should say that we have reproductions of it because the ones that he painted are really delicate. They didn't weather right, as you can imagine. So we do have that in storage. So we did reproduce it. And so those were Kashina panels that he himself designed on it. So so that's why he did it. He really wanted to really showcase what Native Americans' contributions are and the richness of the culture.
Well, the story I heard, too, and I'm not sure if you told me this one or not, it was the Native Americans that actually pointed out to him that there was water closer to home, that he didn't have to travel 7 miles back and forth every day.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was one of those evenings that he went and got some water, and he was just chatting. He loved people. He really was a curious individual, and so he always really wanted to learn about people. And so it was at that station that he sparked a conversation with the Coahuila elder, and he told them, he sort of drew on the sand where he could find some water. So you know, I think one, I can't remember which one, either the hot or the cold, was only 600 yards from his home.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Cabot Yerxa, I mean, that's an interesting name in itself. Cabot, I don't know if I've ever heard of any man named Cabot, and Yerxa, I am, that is, and what is the nationality of that?
Okay, so, Yerxa is Dutch. It's from the Netherlands. It's not spelled the way that we spell it now with the Y-E-R-X. It was spelled with a J. J-U-R-G or something like that, I believe. So once a family came over, I don't know who changed it, but it was one of his ancestors on that. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Irene, do you have anywhere to go? Can you stick around?
I could stick around.
She's sticking around.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what people are going to see when they go to the Cabot's Pueblo Museum. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise right here on Money Radio. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise. I'm Francoise Rhodes, your host. This part of the show is brought to you by Animal Samaritans, who've been improving the lives of animals and people since 1978. And remember all the things that we talked about in the first hour of the show about all the safety around the holidays with your animals. Please be careful with foods and trees and all sorts of stuff that you don't get them sick. And if you do, you can give them a call over there. Their Indio Veterinary Clinic at 760-343-3477. And the one in Thousand Palms, you can call that one number. It'll get you everywhere you need to go to take care of your pets. So we thank them as well. Staying with us, she's been here for just a little while now, is Irene Rodriguez. She's the executive director of the Cabot's Pueblo Museum. I talk about it all the time. I urge you to go there. We're getting Sean. Sean's going. Sean's concern, Irene, was about the size of visit of the facilities when he goes to visit, but it's very big and spacious, actually, the house, and it is on the National Register of Historic Places, and it should be, because it really is a fascinating museum to visit. So, Irene, when people go to the Cabot's, what are they going to be seeing?
They'll be seeing their home, the home that Cabot built, the collections that he collected. He collected Native American pieces. But most importantly, too, they'll be able to see some of the paintings that he did. And he used to write extensively. So we do have a little a piece of a newspaper where he had an article of the local newspaper on the desert since 1913 on that. So, and I encourage everybody to come in. You know, they're all narrow passages, but we'll get through that. And he did that also on purpose because cool air travels faster in narrow passages. So that's why everything's kind of narrow and small, but also because depending on the materials he had, you know, if this is how big the lumber was, then that's how big the space was going to be on it.
Now, you were saying during the break, too, you suggest that people wear not flip-flops, wear tennis shoes or something, because there is some dirt areas. And if you want to go up to the well house, which I have never been to the well house, is kind of a little bit of a rugged path. So you just want everybody to be careful.
Yes, I want to be careful. Those pebbles, you know, heels is not the place to take to the Pueblo Museum. It's a little rustic place. Pebbles, we do have some walkways. Also because being also a historic site, we're not ADA compliant, but we try to do the best that we can for people who have mobility issues as well. And to go to the well house again is going to the third steps that we have up to the little hill. And there's going to be plants and pipes and everything there. So, yes, you have to be extra careful. But, again, you get this fabulous view of the area. And then you see the bathtub that Cabot was soaking.
Oh, he was, and look at the view. That's where they got that one commercial from. They said up there, Cabot. But it is a historic, folks. It is a national, like I said earlier, it's on the National Register of Historic Places. And that's what makes it all so fascinating. It's right here in our own backyard in Desert Hot Springs. Now, what street, because I don't know why, every time I go up there, I take the wrong street. And then I end up coming around. I see the signs that say Cabot. And then I must pass the last one that say turn here or something, because I keep on going. And I end up backtracking around to it. What's the easiest way to get to the Cabot's Pueblo Museum?
So the easiest way that I told our visitors know is they want to take Palm Drive exit. Just head north. So you go up there and you want to make a right turn on Desert View. So that's a few blocks after Hacienda Avenue or Boulevard. I always forget what it is. But after Hacienda, you see it. And then I will say it was a good four blocks, and then you make a right.
I'm writing this down so I do not get lost anymore. I don't know why. And then I end up cruising around up there and looking at the view, and I think this is really where Palm Springs should have been. The views are spectacular up there. You have the mineral springs. It's cooler in the summer because there's a breeze that seems to be always going. So Cabot knew something that we didn't. We should have followed in his footsteps because it really is so pretty up there. Now, once you're on property, a lot of people call it a totem pole. In fact, I just had some listeners that posted a Facebook picture probably about a month ago, and they called it the totem pole. That is not a totem pole. You mentioned it earlier. What are they going to see? And it's 15 feet tall.
Yes. It's taller, right? The feather is 15.
Oh, the feather is
15. So it's actually an Indian carving. It's a face of an Indian, and it was done by Peter Thoth. He really resonated with the plight of the Native Americans here in the United States. He was a refugee from Hungary, and so his goal was to do the Trail of the Tears, I think it was called, the
Trail of the Whispering Giants.
There you go. Across the nation. And so he has a couple of these throughout the states of the U.S. And so they brought this sequoia wood, working with the Department of Interior. He carved it on site. So it took me a good, 6 months.
And it's 43 feet tall. And the feather is 15 feet tall.
And that's cedar from Attawile.
All right. And it is beautiful. And if you're looking for selfie-worthy shots, that some of you just go to places to take selfies, well, you are going to find a lot of them at the Cabot's Pueblo Museum in Desert Hot Springs.
So we have our sign, Cabot's. We have the Waiyoki. And, of course, we have the Pueblo itself. Outside, you'll be amazed at all kinds of selfies. And really just amazed to be somewhere where it's peaceful and calm and vibrant.
And it's just – and there's you'll find something unique and different around every corner. And when you go to the Cabot's Pueblo, the home there, there's so many different components to them. One room seems to be in wood. Another seems to be in something else. And it really is intriguing. The whole property is intriguing. What are the hours of operation and how much does it cost?
Okay, so we're open from October to May, Tuesday through Sunday from 9 to 4. And if you really want to see the Pueblo, the only way to see it is through a guided tour.
Okay.
And that is, there are tours at 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, 1:30 and 2:30. Okay. And the cost for that, something that we charge, is $13 general admission, $11 for seniors, military, and children between 6 and 12 mm-hmm. years old.
And Irene, how hard is it to keep that? Because time is not a friend, I would think. But on the other hand, Cabot knew what he was doing, and I'm sure he made the structures pretty solid.
You know what? They're pretty solid because just thinking about the different earthquakes that we had nearby, it's up on it. So mm-hmm. the only thing that right now that we're worried about is sort of the adobe bricks, but everything is really being upheld on it. And this is something, I should say that the Pueblo, the collection and the property is owned by the city of Desert Hot Springs. And the Cabot's Museum Foundation, which is a nonprofit, sort of has a contract with the city of Desert Hot Springs to operate as a museum. I mean, we work closely, too, to make sure that things are maintained well. If there's something going on, you know, I do communicate with them, and we'll figure out how to get it done.
All right. Well, again, we're lucky to have the Cabot's Pueblo Museum here in the Coachella Valley. Great gift for Christmas to tell you, stocking mm-hmm. stuffer. Get a couple admission passes to the museum there. You can go to their website, which is cabotsmuseum.org. If you've never been, you really need to go. You have visitors come in. Let me tell you, they're going to be surprised when they see that. Yeah.
It's hard to describe it. But you need to experience it.
Right.
And once you experience, you understand what we're all talking about.
And you also have a wonderful gift shop,
by the way.
We don't want to forget that gift shop. Because, and quickly tell everybody, what kind of items do you have? And it's not your typical museum gift shop, folks.
No, thank you. It's we focus on some local artists around the area. So both, it could be ceramics, it could be pottery, it could be jewelry. We also work with some really wonderful vendors that work with Native Americans to bring those items into our store. We also have things because coming in January, we start our culture weekends. So we'll have culture weekends in January, February, March. So January, we have artists from Oaxaca. February, we have artists from the state of Chihuahua who do pottery. And then in March, we'll have some Hopis come in and do some Kachina carving demonstration as well. And to have all the goods as well. And then it's a fundraiser for the museum where the museum receives 25% of the sales. So everything that you can see. And we have some books of the area as well that people are really amazed by it. And some things, you know, to take a souvenir from Cabot's, either be a mug, a t-shirt, or a tote bag, on some pins as well.
Wonderful Christmas gifts. If you know someone that collects Kachina dolls,
They're really great. Yeah, they're really beautiful. And if you're interested, keep the last week, March 24th to the 26th, I believe it is. The information is on our website, which is cabotsmuseum.org. Right. I always forget a little bit of the dates, but it's up there. So
right, and there's always things going on up there as well. So make sure you check the website before you go on up there. Because you don't want to miss anything. You have special events and whatnot. Irene, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
It's great to have you in studio and talk about the Cabot's. And then, of course, as the season goes into play, you have an event, so we'll talk about them on the air and make sure everybody knows what's going on up there.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank
Again,
you.
If you've never been, folks, go. Great way, place to send your visitors and yourself. Go as long. And also good Christmas stuffing tickets, Christmas stocking stuffers. There you go. Spit it out, Francoise. I got it out. All right. We're getting Sean up there too, Irene. We're on a mission.
Yes,
we are having Sean go up there. All right, folks. That's going to wrap it up. We didn't do our travel question of the week. I'll do it next week. I'll put a new travel question up there. We'll just combine. We'll have a couple of them for you. So not to worry. We'll read the answers to those next week. Next week on the show, Craig will be joining us from CoachellaValley.com in the first hour, where we'll talk about all sorts of local things going on. In the second hour, Lee Goodsell is going to join us once again to talk about her recent trip to India. A lot of people have been traveling to India lately, and they are just loving it. So sometimes the perception of what we have is not always the right one. So on that note, we're going to step aside. Everyone have a great week. We'll be back here next Sunday live as always. And until then, remember, it's never too late to get a life. See you next time. Bye.